Have you ever spent time in a hospital? Large healthcare facilities can be daunting. Is there a better way? This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
Today, we'll find out about healthcare facilities that are designed around the people they serve rather than for the convenience of staff.
Florence Nightingale, the founder of modern nursing, insisted that fresh air and sunlight were crucial for healing.
How did healthcare forget her lessons? What exactly is the power of sunlight?
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, how hospitals are rediscovering the healing secret of fresh air and sunlight.
In The People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, the CDC just reported an alarming discovery. Cases of drug-resistant shigellosis are increasing in the U.S. Shigella bacteria cause severe diarrhea. Young children and people with weakened immune systems are especially vulnerable to this easily transmitted gastrointestinal disease. According to the CDC, no FDA-approved oral medication is available for this extensively drug-resistant bacterial infection. Moreover, Shigella can pass resistant genes to other bacteria, which could pose a serious public health risk.
GLP-1 agonists like semaglutide and tirzepatide have become mainstays in treating both type 2 diabetes and obesity. While many people get excellent results from these medicines, better known by the names Ozempic and Wegovy, Mounjaro and Zepbound, not everyone benefits. Two new studies suggest that these differences may have their roots in genes. Researchers at Stanford have identified gene variants in 1 out of 10 people. These make GLP-1 drugs less effective at controlling blood sugar. A different study conducted by scientists affiliated with 23andMe found that some gene variants make people more responsive to GLP-1 medications. That means they're more likely to lose weight, and they may also have more adverse reactions. The bottom line seems to be that genetic variability can influence how well drugs like semaglutide and tirzepatide work.
Proton pump inhibitors such as omeprazole and lansoprazole are prescribed to heal ulcers because they work so well. They can also be helpful for chronic heartburn, but doctors sometimes prescribe them for other, less appropriate indications. Physicians worry that patients taking PPIs unnecessarily are at risk for serious side effects such as kidney injury, C. diff infections, pneumonia, and cardiovascular problems. However, stopping PPIs can be difficult due to rebound hyperacidity. Investigators in France conducted a randomized trial among more than 34,000 patients to see if deprescribing PPIs would be effective. They sent letters to the patients of one group of medical practices. In another group, both doctors and patients received communications. The third group of practices carried on as usual. After 1 year, patients who had been encouraged to ask about deprescribing were about twice as likely to have discontinued their inappropriate PPI than those in usual care.
People in Finland have appreciated sauna bathing for thousands of years. Numerous studies suggest that there are tangible health benefits linked to this practice. A new study reports that 30 minutes in the sauna enhances the release of white blood cells. These are the body's immune defenders against pathogens. In this experiment, volunteers took a cold shower halfway through the session. Previous studies have suggested that regular sauna bathing can help lower blood pressure and reduce the risk of heart attacks, strokes, and even dementia. This study offers one possible explanation for the positive effect on longevity through temporary immune system activation.
A new study suggests that a plant-based diet can offer benefits for cognitive function. This research is unusual because it recruited volunteers from several different ethnic groups, and it's run an exceptionally long time. Researchers recruited nearly 93,000 middle-aged participants in the early 1990s and collected dietary data from them. 10 years later, the volunteers updated the dietary data. During the follow-up, approximately 21,000 subjects developed Alzheimer's disease or another dementia. Analysis shows that people following a predominantly plant-based diet were less likely to develop dementia, but the quality of the diet mattered. People on a healthful diet rich in vegetables, fruits, nuts, and legumes lowered their risk by 7%. On the other hand, those consuming refined grains, potatoes, and extra sugar increased their risk of dementia by 6%. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. Have you ever been to a hospital? Many healthcare facilities can be large and intimidating. The layout often seems designed to be convenient for staff, but it can be confusing for patients.
Today, we're going to learn about a different model for organizing hospital care. What if the patient's needs were prioritized? There are several ways that could be done. Later in this episode, we'll learn about a new hospital in Australia that makes fresh air and sunlight available to all patients.
But first, we turn to Michael Giuliano, president of Plaintree International. Plaintree is a mission-driven nonprofit organization setting the global standard for person-centered excellence across the continuum of care. Michael joined Plaintree in 2022 as chief operating officer following a decade of leadership roles in Australia's public and private healthcare sectors.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Michael Giuliano.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be with you and your guests today on the People's Pharmacy to talk about the importance of person-centered care and Plaintree and our role in the world supporting healthcare organizations in implementing and sustaining person-centered care.
Well, Michael, we're so happy to have you. You know, we spoke with Dr. Susan Frampton about 15 years ago about Plaintree, and we were excited then. And I guess, you know, here we are over a decade and a half later. What has happened to Plaintree over these intervening 15 years? What's the organization like? What was the inspiration in the very beginning? And tell us about the future. Give us a quick overview.
Sure, absolutely. And again, thank you for the opportunity to share this story because we believe it's really powerful in changing the way that people around how humans experience care across healthcare experiences. So I'll rewind the clock a little bit to go back to 1978 to when Plaintree was founded. And it was founded by a single patient named Angelica Tyriot, who traveled to the United States from her home in Buenos Aires and was hospitalized in San Francisco with an unknown illness. She's still alive today and still very much involved in Plaintree. But upon her discharge, she reflected about her experience in hospital and said that there wasn't a balance between the clinical and human sides of care. While the nurses and doctors and the hospital system was great in terms of providing medical care to treat her and to cure her, the humanistic side of it was completely non-existent or out of balance. She felt that it was very transactional instead of relational and didn't feel like she was honored and valued as a unique individual human being with different values and preferences. She reflects on the experience saying that she didn't know what was happening to her. There was nothing humanizing or healing about the environment. It was all very clinical and white. There was no access to nature or light or outside spaces. She wasn't allowed visitors, wasn't allowed access to her medical record, and wasn't feeling engaged or activated as part of a partner in her own care. So she was very taken by this experience and said, I need to do something, and brought together many individuals who were also passionate about this subject and created Plaintree after lots of discussion about what to name the organization. And the history of the name plane tree actually is quite interesting. A lot of people might think it's about actual trees or actual environment. While environment is, of course, important to person-centered care and healing, we don't actually do a lot of tree-related work. The name plane tree actually comes from the type of tree which you can visit on the island of Kos in Greece. And it is history to be the tree under which Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, taught his medical students to not only treat the physical ailments of patients, but to treat the whole person. What makes them unique in terms of not only physical, but psychosocial, emotional, mental, all the things that wrap around us and make us uniquely human to support our recovery and to support sustainability of health and well-being. So from that time, Plane Tree actually started with a group of healthcare libraries across the street from hospitals or co-located with hospitals in California to support access to information, to help patients get access at the time before the internet, before cell phones, get access to information through books and magazines to help inform them, educate them about how to take care of themselves, better understand what questions to ask healthcare providers, and how to better navigate quite a complex healthcare system.
Well, let me interrupt you right there, because I think that is what really drew us to Plane Tree in the first place, Terry.
Yes, that's true. We were very enthusiastic about patients having access to information.
Because back in those days, the idea of allowing patients to learn more about their condition and to have access to medical libraries, for example, that was kind of a foreign concept. Well, let's just fast forward to today. What is Plane Tree like today, both on the information side, but I think more importantly on the social interaction side and even on the physical side? Because, Terry, that was also something that really attracted us, the physical layout.
Yes.
Sure, absolutely. There's lots of things in there, so I'll try to unpick them, but please remind me if I didn't pick up on any of your points. So, you know, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary in 2028, which is very exciting. So in that 50 years, Plane Tree has now grown to partner with healthcare organization in 30 countries through a groundswell of importance and excitement around person-centered care. And I just want to pause here to say, we intentionally use the word person and not patient-centered care, because healthcare is around all the individuals receiving and giving care. So that's the patients, family members, and informal caregivers, staff members, and of course, the broader community. So to your question about how access to information really has grown within our PCC or person-centered care framework and within our organizational certification program, it appears and is woven through every aspect of what we do. So that the patient is an active member of their care team in their care planning, has real-time access to medical records, can update those medical records if there's a mistake, or add to that medical record, or ask questions about what was written about them, can use that information to understand how they care for themselves upon discharge, and working with organizations to really think about, from a patient perspective, those discharge summaries and the opportunity for education even before a patient leaves the facility. It's also a great opportunity with this advent of artificial intelligence, and now that it's seeping into every part of our lives, to also use that for capturing and distilling really complex, fast-moving discussions in inpatient and outpatient settings. A lot of our Plane Tree organizations are embarking on this journey and using AI to capture information in a clinical encounter, summarize it into a very easy to use non-medicalized language, and provide it in real time to the patient to say, does this make sense to you? Do you have questions on it, or do you want to update it? So that before you leave, or the doctor or nurse leaves the bedside, or you leave an outpatient facility, you're not wondering, did I really understand and capture everything? You're being given the authority to be put in the driver's seat of your own care, armed with information to make decisions that are personalized to what is most valuable and what matters most to you as a patient. So we've seen that grow quite a lot since our humble beginnings in 1978 around this importance to information. We've also grown to understand what makes people different and unique. That even if you provide information to me, I consume it and understand it in a different way to you. So I'm a more visual learner, where you may be more auditory, or you may like to read things. So we've expanded Plaintree to figure out not only the access, but the consumption and understanding of information, to ensure that, again, we're really arming patients with all the tools that they need to keep themselves healthy, keep themselves well, according to their own values and preferences. So that's how the information has grown.
Let me see if I understand this. So if I were to see a physician, as I saw my own physician last week, if I were to see a physician in a Plaintree facility, instead of getting a discharge summary in my Epic My Chart, I would actually be given the opportunity to review that summary before I left and my doctor and I were still talking?
The way that you can do that, of course, would vary by Plaintree organization, but one of our fundamentals of our standards is that patients, regardless of inpatient, outpatient, behavioral health, ambulatory, emergency, should be given real-time access to their healthcare record for the opportunity to ask questions, understand it, and make corrections. So if you prefer to review that when you get home, that's fine, but you should have the opportunity to see what's being written about you, because that is your record. That is about you. You own technically that information. So we're trying to create this mind shift and engagement shift at Plaintree organizations around how patients should be given the opportunity to access that information in real time and make changes as needed.
You know, Michael, one of the things that really impresses me is that we can make changes, fix errors if we were in the Plaintree system. That doesn't happen with the Epic system so easily. You can say, wait a minute, that wasn't quite right, or I'm not taking that particular medication anymore. And sometimes it gets changed and sometimes it doesn't. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we want to find out what a Plaintree hospital actually looks like, how your physical facilities are so different from most other hospitals and clinics. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Michael Giuliano, president of Plaintree International. Plaintree is a mission-driven, nonprofit organization prioritizing person-centered care.
After the break, we'll learn how Plaintree's principles affect hospital architectural plans.
Can Plaintree patients go outside during their hospitalization?
How could hospitals that work so differently survive in the current environment?
We'll also learn about a remarkable new hospital in Australia, with outdoor access from every patient room.
Fresh air and sunlight sound very old-fashioned. Why are they still so important for good health and healing?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Today, we're learning how hospitals are rediscovering the healing value of sunlight and fresh air.
Our guest is Michael Giuliano, president of Plaintree International.
Michael, one of the things that has impressed us when we've talked about Plaintree in the past is the idea that the Plaintree principles actually get translated into architecture. So can you tell us, if we walked into a Plaintree hospital, what would look different from walking into any ordinary community hospital?
That's a great question, Terry. And, you know, the healing environment is a central component of our framework and our standards. What we hear from patients and from caregivers is that walking into a Plaintree hospital is welcoming and it feels not like a hospital. It feels like a home. And that is through very intentional work through all the different experiences, interactions from parking to registration to then navigating the organization. And also very intentionally ensuring that waiting rooms don't seem just like a sea of chairs, but there's opportunities for positive interactions and diversions, that there's access to outside space for healing, that there's access to natural light in rooms as best as possible. So we're trying to shift, and what you feel, not only in the culture, but in the physical space, is that there's colors, that there's light, that this space is not necessarily feeling sickly or clinical, but feeling welcoming and something that is humanistic, that reminds you of home and a healing space to de-stress and to be calm and to focus on your recovery.
Now, you have mentioned a couple of times outside space and nature. Can you tell us how that might translate into a particular hospital encounter?
Sure, absolutely. I was just visiting some of our Latin America clients in Colombia and Chile, and they have purposely built extensions to their new wards that are built around internal gardens. So all of their patient rooms have access through a door to an internal garden, that they have access to sunlight, that they're able to walk outside and see green space and feel the sun. They've also integrated into their inpatient towers a communal sort of family and outside garden that has oxygen hookups and everything in this outdoor space. So if you're a patient who's ambulant or not, but needs oxygen, you can sit outside instead of being stuck in your room, even though you may have access to windows, to continuously recover, get the medical treatment that you need, but also have access to space and fresh air outside of a hospital environment.
You know, I think a lot of our listeners are going, well, wow, how do they do that? That's so different from my community hospital. You know, the hospitals are closing in this country. There are financial disasters all throughout healthcare right now. How are you managing to survive or perhaps even flourish in the current climate?
Well, that's a great question. And I think the question that we pose back is that person-centered care should not be a nice-to-have add-on. It should be the foundation upon which you build everything else in healthcare. And the question is, what is the cost to you, hospital or healthcare facility, of not doing person-centered care now? And the cost usually is decreases in margins, disconnection with your community, disconnection with your caregivers, loss of retention. And then we see sort of this death spiral because you're not focusing on person-centered care through your operations. So the real importance of PCC and Plaintree is not an overnight fix. We're not positioning this as something easy to come in and magic wand fix it. This is a mindset shift, a cultural shift, so that you feel different in the way that you're engaged. You feel different in the physical environment. You behave differently because of that physical environment, which all supports healing back to our principles and our values.
One quick question about emergency departments.
Yes.
I recently had to go to a local hospital for a swelling in my leg after playing tennis, and I was a little afraid that I might have what's called a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis, and I thought, you know, I just better be safe and go to the emergency department. they were great. They were sweet. They were kind. I had to wait about 2, 3, 4 hours. There were some issues about an ultrasound, and it was very slow. Mm-hmm. And I think most people recognize that if they go to the emergency department, they may have to wait 6 or 8 hours. Uh-huh. What's it like in a Plaintree facility if you have an emergency?
So that's a great question. The emergency departments are not immune to the cultural change and the person-centered care change that's required in an organization, but it's usually the most difficult part to instill and sustain those changes, that mind shift for person-centered care, because it's the front door to the hospital. Now, it's very difficult to reduce waiting times. Of course, you can do that through operations and efficiencies. But what we work on with Plaintree hospitals and what I've seen done in some of our highest performing facilities is that there's clear communication about the triage system that they use, the reason why you're waiting, the communication and consistent updates on your waiting time and why, and also supporting you in, as we call it, positively diverting your attention while you're waiting, using that time for health promotion or for reading or other activation like music therapy, art therapy. So you're using time to still heal people even before receiving sort of clinical and direct medical care. Some of our organizations use vendors that provide concierge services, because if you come from tennis with a suspected DVT, maybe you have time, you didn't have time to go home, or you forgot your phone charger. These vendors provide all that service direct to you. So it can also reduce the amount of patients that leave without being seen, a key KPI that is measured by hospitals, to ensure that the patients are staying even if the wait is slightly longer than expected, by supporting through communications and other humanistic factors that support your life outside of the ED to help keep you there, to then keep you healthy and address your concerns.
And what do you see for the future?
So for Plaintree, we see a lot of exciting things for the future. Of course, our additional global expansion, further support and engagement of staff members in the community with social determinants of health, as we're shifting not only in the U.S., but globally to value-based care, not just paying for volume and number of procedures, but paying for what matters most to patients, understanding a blend of clinical outcomes, patient-reported experience outcomes, patient-reported outcome measures, to really determine what value means and how we pay for that. So Plaintree is a critical part of that equation, and we're now trying to forge the frontier of helping organizations think about value instead of volume and how to deliver that consistently for patients, families, and staff.
Michael Giuliano, thank you very much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you, Joe and Terry. I very much appreciate your time and the opportunity to use this as a platform to support person-centered care amongst your network. Very much appreciate it.
You've been listening to Michael Giuliano, president of Plaintree International, a mission-driven nonprofit care organization. He joined Plaintree in 2022 as chief operating officer, following a decade of leadership roles in Australia's public and private health care sectors.
To learn more about healing potential of sunlight, we turn now to Dr. Roger Schwelt. He's associate clinical professor at the University of California, Riverside School of Medicine, and an assistant clinical professor at the School of Medicine and Allied Health at Loma Linda University.
Welcome back to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Roger Schwelt.
Good to be here again. Thanks, Joe and Terry.
Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Schwelt, we have just talked with Michael Giuliano, who is the president of Plaintree International. That's over a couple of hundred hospitals and organizations that he's affiliated with. They are all about focusing on the idea of person-centered care, and he shared the idea of patients having access to both light and fresh air. Fresh air is really important to them and to you. So we thought that you would be the person who could follow up and tell us why light and fresh air are so important, especially with regards to a new hospital in Melbourne, Australia called Footscray. Please give us your insight.
Yeah, this is really important for patients. I didn't realize how important this was until we hit the pandemic, and people were were really suffering and dying around me. It was quite important for their healthcare. So this Footscray Hospital, which is a $1.5 billion construction, and what they've done is they've incorporated natural light and fresh air in an environment where they've planted over 5,500 different plants in and around the hospital and inside. And the reason why they've done this is not because of some gimmick or anything like that, but because of solid data that has been laid down for years, comparing those patients who are in rooms who have big windows versus small windows, lots of light versus no light, brick walls versus scenes of lush greenery. And in every one of those situations, what we're seeing is that not only are patients doing better, but they're also leaving the hospital faster when they're in that type of an environment. And quite honestly, this is something that we have forgotten. We used to construct hospitals over 100 years ago that had incorporated into them the hospital as part of the healing aspect of the property, as opposed to simply a building that housed what we used to do to take care of patients. So the data is there, and we can go through specifically looking at fresh air and sunlight, but those two together are very powerful, scientifically proven ways of getting patients with multiple different types of ailments better, faster.
Well, we do want to talk about the data on fresh air and sunlight and maybe some of those 5,500 plants as well. But first, maybe you could give us just a little refresher on the history of hospital architecture.
Yeah, so it used to be that it was part of the code that every single room in a hospital had a window, had access to outside fresh air, and was able to be ventilated. With the advent of modern medicine and things of that nature and the busyness, it was around probably 1942 that we started to see a change, a shift in hospital architecture, where because of efficiency and because of the fact that nursing was very busy and they had to get from one place to another, they started to make the floor plans efficient. And this was actually first seen in a publication that I've seen in 1942, where a new pavilion came out. And it was very interesting. Instead of one hallway lined by rooms on both sides that had access to fresh air and sunlight, what they made is two hallways with windows and rooms with windows on either side, but there was this sort of central area in the middle that had no access to air or sunlight. And it was a revolutionary thing. In fact, it was so controversial that the planning architects that were on the committee to approve these things actually resigned as a result of what was being presented. This really caught on because of efficiency, but because of the fact that we would now have rooms that were no longer accessible to sunlight or air, this was a problem. And if you look in modern hospitals today, it's as if we've completely forgotten that fresh air and sunlight were part of the formula for getting people better. And so what we're seeing now is a look back and a realization that that was something that we left out of the equation and we really needed it.
Let's talk a little bit about the data then. You said that there have been studies to show that fresh air and sunlight, I'm assuming independently and together, make a difference. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
And before you go into that, let's turn back the clock to Florence Nightingale. You know, there are a lot of young people who are listening who don't even know who she was, because she was sort of the first person to recognize those elements were really important for healing.
Yeah. So Florence Nightingale, known as the modern founder of nursing, basically was a nurse during the Crimean War. She was named Florence because she was born in Italy, but took care of those patients there in Turkey, where there were so many of them that she noticed that those that were outside were getting better much faster. And she wrote this down. This is back in the 1850s. And so this is how things got cleaned up. This is how things got preserved. She was well recognized during her career and her lifetime for making these observations. And look, she didn't have all of these scientific accoutrements that we have today, but she was still able to see it. It was that obvious. And as time has gone forth, a lot of studies have been done. And specifically, if we look at sunlight, one of the major components of sunlight is infrared light. And not only do we have retrospective observational data in the hundreds of thousands of patients that have shown in multiple studies that people who are closer to the window, people who have bigger windows, better views, are discharged from the hospital faster. We also have randomized placebo-controlled trials now looking at infrared light as given from what we call photobiomodulation, where we're actually giving this light in a very prescribed, specific way. We have found in recent studies in the last year or two that patients who are exposed to this type of light for just 15 minutes a day. There was a study that was done in Brazil, 60 patients, didn't require a lot. 15 minutes of 850 nanometer light wavelength, this is infrared light that you cannot see, resulted in a 30% faster discharge from the intensive care unit. And not only that, but a better strength. And so to the point that when they left the intensive care unit, they didn't need as much rehab. There was another study also in Brazil, 30 patients that randomized this type of light, this time 940 nanometer light, again, infrared light, major component of sunlight, that actually resulted in a 30% faster hospitalization in patients with COVID. And not only that, they were able to breathe more deeply, stronger, and have better saturations when they were done. Again, this is only 15 minutes a day to this type of exposure resulted in that dramatic of an effect.
Now, when you say faster hospitalization, you mean they got out of the hospital sooner?
Correct. They left the hospital 30% faster. Now, realize that, and many people don't realize this, but the majority of hospitals today are paid based on a diagnosis that a physician makes. So the physician is independent. He makes a diagnosis. The hospital gets payment from the insurance company based on that diagnosis. And the longer the patient stays in the hospital, the more the hospital has to pay. So it's really in the financial advantage of the hospital to get the patient as good and as well as fast as possible and discharge that patient. So it's really a win-win-win here when we can find something that's cheap, it's easy to implement, it doesn't cost a lot of money, the patient gets better, the hospital makes a better bottom line, and the insurance pays less money. There's really a financial incentive all the way around here for people to implement these type of things. And quite frankly, this is the reason why we're seeing a brand new hospital in Australia, $1.5 billion construction. They're now incorporating these ideas into the treatment of patients.
You're listening to Dr. Roger Schwelt, co-founder and presenter of MedCram. Dr. Schwelt is quadruple board certified in internal medicine, pulmonary diseases, critical care medicine, and sleep medicine through the American Board of Internal Medicine.
After the break, Dr. Schwelt will share an absolutely remarkable story about sunlight and healing.
A teenage boy dying of a fungal infection just wanted to go outside.
That simple act saved his life. What is the healing power of sunlight and fresh air?
Decades ago, fresh air and sunlight were mainstays of tuberculosis treatment.
How does sunlight help in healing?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Thank you. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is brought to you in part by Sonu, an FDA-approved drug-free treatment for nasal congestion and runny nose, using sound instead of steroids. More at GetSonu.com. That's GetSonu.com.
Today, we are focusing on the healing power of sunlight and fresh air. Most modern hospitals are designed to be efficient for hospital personnel. Making your way through a large medical facility can often feel daunting. Getting from the parking structure to a clinic is frequently confusing, and if you have to spend time in a hospital room, you're likely to discover that fresh air and sunlight are rarely priorities. Should that change?
To learn more about this, we're talking with Dr. Roger Schwelt. He's an associate clinical professor at the University of California, Riverside School of Medicine, and an assistant clinical professor at the School of Medicine and Allied Health at Loma Linda University. He's co-founder and presenter for MedCram, a site that offers concise and easy-to-follow online medical videos on a range of health topics. Dr. Schwelt is quadruple board certified in internal medicine, pulmonary diseases, critical care medicine, and sleep medicine through the American Board of Internal Medicine. His current practice is in Beaumont, California, where he is a critical care physician, pulmonologist, and sleep physician at Optum, California.
Dr. Schwelt, you have shared on your MedCram site a fascinating story about a 15-year-old boy, I think he was in, Minnesota, who had a very serious health condition called ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, and why sunlight made such a difference in his outcome. Could you share that story, please?
Yeah, I've been talking about sunlight for some time, and as a result, Amy Honmeyer, who is this boy's mother, gave me a call and she said, you know, I really need to talk to you about my son and what happened here because I do believe that sunlight had a role. So this was a young gentleman, 15 years old in Minnesota, who came down with that terrible condition, basically a leukemia, and as a result was on chemotherapy. Now, chemotherapy does reduce your body's ability to fight infections. And he was admitted in 2024, in June 1st, with a very severe flesh-eating fungus called mucormycosis. And it basically, within a month's time, ate up his left lung so badly that the only way that they could save his life was to remove his left lung. So they did that after about 4 weeks of being in a regular hospital with all the types of lighting we can imagine. It was a very high-end hospital in Minnesota. Unfortunately, he did have his left lung removed. But shortly after that, he started noticing a worsening condition. The doctors noticed that on the right side, the infection had spread. Obviously, they couldn't take out the right lung. And despite the most powerful antifungal medications, this was like amphotericin B and posaconazole, very, very strong antifungal medications, he continued to get worse to the point where there was a family discussion with the doctors saying that, look, we obviously can't take the right lung out. We can't put him on a ventilator because that's really going to lead to nowhere. And basically, they decided that they were going to continue with further care, but if he got worse, there's nothing else that they could do. And so they had to describe this and tell this to a perfectly conscious 15-year-old boy who by this point was on a non-invasive mask that was helping him breathe on very high oxygen. He had fevers. They did a CT scan. This is a scan of the lung, and it showed that most of the right lung was involved with infection, and he was breathing basically on just a portion of his lower lobes. And I, by the way, I saw all the medical records. His mom sent it to me, and I reviewed all of it, looked at the CT scans.
And Dr. Yeah. Schwelt, just for our listeners' understanding, you are a pulmonologist. I mean, this is an area of expertise, so you were perfectly equipped to be able to analyze his situation, which was grim.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm not a pediatrician, but certainly everything here is what we do on adults. And I could certainly understand it. 15 years of age, he's practically an adult anyway. So yes, this is perfectly within my wheelhouse. And again, I had a review of the medical records.
And then what happened? I mean, I have to assume that the family was absolutely desperate and feeling really scared.
Yeah, and not just the family, but really, honestly, the medical personnel were just devastated that this is what was happening, and there was nothing that they could do. They did not know anything about, you know, light, not even the patient. But when they approached him and told him that, based on their best evidence, that he had about 2 days to live, there was nothing else that they could do, they started talking about, you know, what were your last wishes that you'd like, you know, as they do. And, you know, without knowing the benefits of sunlight or fresh air, he simply just, as a 15-year-old boy, just said, I just want to go outside. He had been in the hospital now for about 6 weeks, not seeing the light of day, being inside. And so, you know, as a medical professional, you are very motivated to do whatever it is that you can do to relieve suffering if you can't get somebody better. And that's exactly what they did. They constructed a chair that he could get into that could hold all of the drips that he was on, all of the supplemental oxygen that he required, so he could be mobile and get outside. And that's exactly what he did. And to their surprise, and everyone else's surprise, he went outside and he didn't die. Within the first day, his fever completely went away. His white count within 2 days completely normalized. And at the end of those 2 days that they had given him, he did not die, but in fact got better. And by the end of 5 days, he continued to get so much better that they actually decided to get another CAT scan. And this was the moment that his mom told me that they were just completely floored, because when he came back from the CT scan and they pulled it up in the room where all the doctors were there and they were just looking, they knew they were going to expect something because he was clinically better, but they were not ready for what they saw. And that was that lung, that right lung, that remaining right lung that was probably 80% involved with this fungus. When they brought it up just 5 days later, after going outside and not changing any of his medications, it was now 80% better. And there was no infection. In fact, she said that there was a gasp in the room, and even some of the hospital personnel even like kind of swore under their breath, like they couldn't believe what they were seeing.
Wow.
That's incredible. What do you think happened?
This is an incredible finding, and it's notable because really nothing else had changed. The only thing that they did was he got light. And this is the very type of light that we now know can turn off toll-like receptor 4 receptors, the same type of receptors that we see in COVID inflammation with infrared light. This is the same type of light that we now know in a randomized controlled trial reduces inflammation, improves length of stay, improves hemodynamics, improves pulmonary function tests, improves the hematological responses to viral infections. So it seems like we have the data physiologically, and we have these amazing stories now of people going outside and getting better. And then you put it against the backdrop of luminaries from over 100 years ago saying, look, the two things that I find that are the most impressive in terms of getting people better is fresh air and sunlight. This is the reason why you're starting to see people investing $1.5 billion in new constructions that incorporate these things into making patients better.
Now, Dr. Schwell, not every community is going to rebuild its hospital so that all patients have access within their rooms or, you know, easily to fresh air and sunlight. But what should they be doing? Shouldn't there be some general recognition that getting people outside could get them better faster?
Absolutely. And it's not difficult to do. What you just need to be able to do is to get patients into wheelchairs, get patients into hospital beds. Look, there are other hospitals around the world that are doing this. There's some examples in Spain, in Barcelona, where there's a hospital literally on the beach. And as a practical routine, the staff, they don't have a brand new hospital. It's not, you know, a brand new construction. They're simply getting patients outside and wheeling them down to the beach. to get that fresh air and sunlight. But you don't even need a beach to do that. There are hospitals specifically in the southeast of the United States which are getting patients outside to doing the same thing. It's interesting because the difficulty is not in the therapy. The difficulty is in the procedures and protocols of getting patients mobile, making sure that they're stable, and that you have the staff to monitor them as you get them outside. The treatment itself is absolutely free, but it's simply the liability and the stability of the patients. And so the difficulty with that is sometimes we can't do that for patients because they're so unstable. So the flip side of that is trying to get the technology into the patients. And so that's where we see infrared light, photobiomodulation. But I see that as secondary to the actual benefit of getting patients outside into the sunlight.
You know what's so fascinating to me, Dr. Schwelt, is that people with tuberculosis 100 years ago were treated with what you're talking about today. That is to say, the TB sanitariums around the country, and there were some here in North Carolina up in the mountains of Asheville, but I'm sure that there were others in many places, people were encouraged to go outside with their, you know, lung condition pretty serious, but even in the middle of the winter, they were bundled up in wheelchairs and taken outside for a period of time almost every day. How did we forget that?
That's a very good question. I think what we forgot was we were dazzled by the luminance of pharmacological interventions. Let me give you an example. So it used to very well be that at the turn of the century, the Nobel Prizes in medicine were given out for people that discovered that, for instance, light was able to treat tuberculosis, that heat was able to cure neurosyphilis. But as we discovered things like penicillin and other modalities, other medications, instead of adding them to the accoutrements that we already had, to the base treatment that we already had, we instead of incorporating them into the therapy, we turned our attention to those alone, and we doubled down on that particular way of healing, and we completely forgot the principles of health and the effects of things like heat and light, and how dramatic those are in our healing, to the point that even today in the United States, if you want to go to the premier places of treatment for tuberculosis, they are going to be historically at places of high altitude. For instance, National Jewish Hospital in Denver, Colorado, is the premier place to treat mycobacterial diseases, diseases of tuberculosis. And that is because it is built on a tradition of excellence from a facility that existed at high altitude at a sanitarium in Denver, Colorado. So this is if we look back on our roots, if we look back far enough, the hints and the light, even though it's dim, of how we used to treat people and the benefits of that are there. We just have to look for them.
And you say the researchers are now beginning to understand exactly how light affects the human body?
Exactly.
Tell us a little bit about technology. You have interviewed someone who created something called the Shadow Map technology. We have about 2 minutes left to talk about that, and then we need you to summarize your recommendations for patients and caregivers going forward. But what is the Shadow Map?
Shadow Map, yes. Georg, living in Vienna, he one summer day noticed that he couldn't get sun. And so when he was there living in Vienna, it was because of the buildings, the shadows. So what he created was an app that you can download, and actually you can get a lot more extras installed on that map. But basically, anywhere in the world, it will tell you where there is going to be sun, and where the sun is going to be based on the map, based on the buildings where you are. So if you want to go and get sunlight, enjoy sunlight, you can find a park near you, and you can figure out where that sun is going to be so that you can be there when that sun is going to be there. Now, there's some interesting aspects to the app, too. You can, for upgrades, you can look at the roof of a house, how the sun is going to look at any particular time of year, what on any particular type of date. So it really incorporates the idea that sunlight is so beneficial. And if you are wanting to move to a house, or you want to move to an area, or you want to build a construction, all of that is incorporated, and you'll know exactly where the sun is going to be at any time of year. It's a kind of map that we would have expected the Druids might have had when they were building Stonehenge. It would have been a perfect thing. If you want to build your own Stonehenge, this is the app that you want to have.
Very cool. We just have a minute and a half left. Your recommendations to patients and caregivers when it comes to, you know, getting sunlight and infrared in particular, if they want to stay healthy or get over an infection?
Yeah, so the infrared light is the major component of sunlight, and it's there predominantly all day, but particularly before 10 or after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the best way to get this is to get outside, get around greenery, which is highly reflective, so trees and grass. And you can even be in the cool of the day and still get plenty of this infrared light. You need at least 15 to 20 minutes at a time, so make sure to prepare for that. And if you want to get the benefits of circadian rhythm, the best time to get this type of light is in the morning. So if you want to kill a number of birds with one stone, the best thing to do is to get outside before 9 o'clock, get into the sunlight, get into the greenery, get outside and get some fresh air. And you will notice that not only will it improve mitochondrial function, but it will also set your circadian rhythm.
And mitochondrial function is important because?
Mitochondrial function is important because it is the powerhouse of the cell, and it is the thing that will drive your metabolism. So that is very important.
Dr. Roger Schwelt, thank you ever so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Schwelt, Associate Clinical Professor at the University of California Riverside School of Medicine and Assistant Clinical Professor at the School of Medicine and Allied Health at Loma Linda University. He's co-founder and presenter for MedCram. Dr. Schwelt is quadruple board certified in internal medicine, pulmonary diseases, critical care medicine, and sleep medicine through the American Board of Internal Medicine. His current practice is in Beaumont, California, where he is a critical care physician, pulmonologist, and sleep physician at Optum, California. We spoke earlier with Michael Giuliano, president of Plaintree International.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show, Al Wodarski engineered, Dave Graydon edits our interviews, BJ Lederman composed our theme music.
This show is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with the People's Pharmacy.
Today's show is number 1469. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. That's where you can share your comments about this episode. You can also reach us through email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
Our interviews are available through your favorite podcast provider. You'll find the podcast on our website on Monday morning. In this week's podcast, you'll learn more about how Plaintree Hospitals approach billing from a person-centered perspective.
At peoplespharmacy.com, you could sign up for our free online newsletter to get the latest news about important health stories. When you subscribe, you also have regular access to information about our weekly podcast. We would be so grateful if you would write a review of the People's Pharmacy and post it to the podcast platform you prefer. If you find our topics thought-provoking, please share them with friends and family. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week.